Hi, this is Barry List of Informs, and you're listening to Informs Today. March Madness is upon us, and as we do every year, we turn to Dr. Sheldon Jacobson of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign for help picking winners in office pools. His website, by the way, is at bracketodds.cs.illinois.edu. Dr. Jacobson, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me, Barry.
A few things have changed since we spoke last. First is a challenge from Warren Buffett and Quicken Loans. What's the challenge?
Well, the challenge is that if you can put together a perfect bracket which covers all of the 68 teams in determining who will win, so there are 67 games, you will win $1 billion.
And what are the odds of winning?
Well, if you treat each game as a toss-up, there are over 147 quintillion combinations to consider. That's the number 147 plus 18 zeros. Now, there are certain games that you can count on going one way or the other, so even optimistically, the odds of winning are on the order of 1 trillion to 1. So that gives an expected value of under one penny in terms of the cost to Warren Buffett and Quicken Loans.
Any idea why they did this? Is it just to gain attention?
Well, it's great fun, and the tournament has become a national event, and as a result of that, it provides the opportunity for people to focus even more on the excitement of who's going to win the national championship.
So I'm not a basketball fan, and some of our listeners might not be. So for me and them, give us a short introduction to March Madness and the NCAA and how seeding works.
Sure. The selection committee gets together. There are a certain number of teams that, are, in fact, win their tournament or their league, and they get an automatic bid. There are other teams which are at-large selections. It results in 68 total teams being in the tournament. They play their way through a bracket until eventually we reach April 7th, 2014, to crown the national champion. So it's a single elimination tournament. You can have a bad day and lose to a team that you shouldn't lose to, and you're pretty much gone for the year.
Now, we're talking on March 18th, and the top seeds were named, I believe, on Sunday, the March 16th. What was your reaction?
Well, three of the four top seeds were very expected, which is Florida, Arizona, and Wichita State. There was some controversy around Wichita State, but they do have a perfect record so far. They haven't lost, and as a result, it seemed reasonable. The fourth number one seed was the tricky one, and a number of teams were in the mix, Kansas being one of them, Wisconsin, Michigan, Villanova, and it turned out to be Virginia. Every one of those teams I mentioned has a flaw, but nonetheless, someone had to get it, and it turned out to be Virginia this year.
And did you feel any were underseeded or overseeded?
Well, if we look at the tournament and we look at the teams that have been seeded, there certainly are a number of teams that appear to be under and overseeded. One which jumps out in the West is San Diego State, which got a 4 seed, which looks like it was overseeded relative to its compatriot in its own league, which was New Mexico, which had beaten it a couple of times, including in its own tournament, and ended up a 7 seed. So that would be an example. Another controversial seeding was Louisville, which was given a 4th seed, and people consider it to be, in fact, an extremely strong team this year, ranked in the top 5 near the end of the season, but ended up with a 4th seed. So this makes for more excitement in terms of how the teams are going to advance and play each other and propagate through the bracket.
So take us through the process of the different rounds leading up to the Final Four and, of course, the final match. What are they, and how do you approach each round as you're calculating probability here?
Well, we don't consider the first four, which are played on the Tuesday and the Wednesday, which is the 18th and the 19th of March. We only look at the teams which reach basically the final 64. The first round games are always exciting because you end up with major teams from the power conferences playing teams that are extremely good, mid-majors from lesser conferences. And what we do is, in our analysis, is we've used the data over the last 29 years and looked for trends in how the seeds will, in fact, advance through the tournament. We've found very consistently that there are these trends. To give you an example, everybody talks about the 12-5 upset, and there's good reason why they have, because 12 seeds, on average, will win one or two of the games consistently every single year. They have a phenomenal record. While 11 seeds are almost as good, they're winning almost the same number. But even 13th and 14th seeds, on average, we will see one or two of those teams advancing into the second round, which means a third and a fourth seed has been defeated, a team which was considered in the top 20 very naturally throughout the entire year. So as a result, the first round adds a tremendous amount of excitement to the tournament.
Upsets are important. Why are they crucial, and what do you tell amateur bracketologists about them?
Well, when it comes to upsets, quite often the amateur bracketologist will pick either too many or, in some cases, too few upsets. Both are actually risky. There is a consistent pattern on the number of upsets that do occur. If we take, for example, the Sweet 16, which is a team winning two games to be able to get to the round of 16, in 25 of the last 29 years, a team seeded either 11, 12, 13, 14, or 15 has actually reached that round, which means that you tend to want to pick, on average, one or two teams which are ranked or seeded 11th to 15th in that round. Same thing with teams seeded 7 to 10, which one expected to have been eliminated by now. We see, on average, one to two of those teams also reaching the Sweet 16. So these are the kinds of patterns that we've tried to observe, and then we help people by saying, don't pick too many or too few upsets, and you'll find that your bracket at least has a chance to perform well.
So do you have a general breakdown in terms of seeds that should go into somebody's card?
Oh, sure. When it comes to the Sweet 16, I would suggest one or two 11 to 15s. I would suggest one or two 7 to 10s. I would suggest four to five teams that are seated 4th, 5th, and 6th, and the remaining teams should be seated 1, 2, or 3, because, of course, those are the top 12 teams, and they are the favorites.
Since many of our listeners are in operations research and analytics, tell us a little bit about the more technical side, the role of probabilistic analysis in your forecasting.
Well, we've used our probability models. In particular, we've looked at the geometric distribution as well as the exponential distribution and used that to model how the teams will compete against each other. Once again, that always gives you a chance that even when one team is highly favored over another, there's a small but positive probability that, in fact, a weaker team will win. Just to give you an example, we've been able to use this approach to compute the probability that a number 16 seed actually reaches the Final Four. Now, a number 16 seed has never even won a game, but our models enable us to compute that probability. And in fact, the odds of it occurring are in the order of around 680 to 1 against it happening. Very rare odds. But nonetheless, our models enable us to do that.
Now, we mentioned your website up front, and I have to say that in the past, I, being a layperson, have had difficulty reading it. Looking at it this year, it looks very different. How has it changed, and has your methodology changed also?
Our methodology continues to evolve over time. What we've tried to do is make it as easy for the budding bracketologist to use the tool, and we focused a lot more not so much on the absolute probabilities or the absolute odds, but the relative odds. So to give you a simple example, the most likely Final Four combination of seeds are two number ones, a two, and a three. You can use that as a basis of comparison. So if you decide to put teams in, for example, maybe a Florida, which is a number one, and then maybe a number eight, Gonzaga, and then maybe a number four, Louisville, and then maybe a number five, Cincinnati, in the four regions, you can then compare that probability to the most likely probability and see how many times more likely it is or less likely it is. And that gives the average person the opportunity to assess how much risk they want to take in their bracket. So that's what we've tried to do, give people the chance to compare the probability and the odds.
And it looks like your website gets more and more accessible to the layperson who is filling out their card.
Absolutely. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make it easy for sports fans to not only have fun with the event, but also use the tool in a way that can help them guide their thinking, because so often it's our heart that dictates who we want to put in our bracket, but we make it possible to also use a little bit in your head. The other thing is that with such a large amount of data that's available, we try and tease out insights and make it easy for sports fans to use this data and this analytics in an intelligent way without necessarily having the technical expertise to be able to do it themselves.
We only have time for a couple questions, so let me ask you, what does your own dance card look like?
Well, I don't do one. I have a number of people who send me emails and contact me asking me to work with them to create one. I've made a conscious decision that that's not something that I will do, so I do not create a bracket myself. I allow sports fans to have fun with it and use our website to create their own.
And finally, how do you plan to spend your winnings if you win the Buffett Quicken Challenge?
Well, since I won't be participating, I won't be spending the winnings, but I would love to see somebody win it, and if they did, it would just show that even the longest of long shots are possible.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Sheldon Jacobson of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Professor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, and enjoy the tournament.
And thank you for listening to Informs Today, a podcast by the Institute for Operations Research and the Management Sciences. For more about analytics, operations research, and this series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. But then remember, keep on crunching those numbers.